So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, we're in Canto 10, which is entitled Summum Bonum. And we're in Chapter 1, which is entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. Text 23. Vasudeva Grihe Sakshat Bhagavan Purushaha Paraha Janishyate Tat Priya Artham Sambhavantu Surastriyaha Vasudeva Grihe Sakshat Bhagavan Purusha Paraha Janishyate Tat Priyartam Sambhavantu Surastriyaha. Please chant. Matas, please. Janishyate tat priyartam Sambhavantu sudastriyaha Vasudeva grihe sakshat Bhagavan Purusha Param Janishyate Tat Priyatam Sambhavantu Sudastriyam Vasudeva Grihe Saksha Bhagavan Purusha Param Sambhavantu Surastriyam Vasudeva Grihe. In the house of Vasudev, who would be the father of Krishna when the Lord appeared Sakshat personally, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has full potency. Purushaha, the original person. Paraha, who is transcendental. Janishyate, will appear. Tat priya artam, and for his satisfaction. Sambhavantu, should take birth. Surastriyaha, all the wives of the demigods. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudev, Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Jai. In Bhagavad Gita 4.9, the Lord says, Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti. After giving up the material body, the devotee of the Lord returns home back to Godhead. This means that the devotee is first transferred to the particular universe where the Lord is at that time staying to exhibit his pastimes. There are innumerable universes, and the Lord's appearing in one of these universes at every moment. Therefore, his pastimes are called Nitya Lila, eternal pastimes. The Lord's appearance as a child in the house of Devaki takes place continuously in one universe after another. Therefore, the devotee is first transferred to that particular universe where the pastimes of the Lord are current. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, even if a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, he enjoys the happiness of heavenly planets, where the most pious people dwell, and then takes birth in the house of a Shuchi or Shriman, a pious Brahmana or a wealthy Vaishya. Shuchi nam Shrimatam gehe yoga brashto vijayate. Thus, a pure devotee, even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary system where pious people reside. From there, if his devotional service is complete, such a devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. Herein it is said, Sambhavantu Surastriyaha. Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, were thus ordered to appear in the other dynasty in Vrindavan to enrich the pastimes of Lord Krishna. These Surastri, when further trained to live with Krishna, would be transferred to the original Koloka Vrindavan. During Lord Krishna's pastimes within this world, the Surastri were to appear in different ways in different families to give pleasure to the Lord, just so that they would be fully trained before going to the eternal Goloka Vrindavan. With the association of Lord Krishna, either at Dwarka Puri, Mathura Puri, or Vrindavan, they would certainly return home, back to Godhead. Among the Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, there are many devotees, such as the mother of the Upendra incarnation of Krishna. It was such devoted women who were called for in this connection. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangum Langate Girim Yatripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Anchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Kaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vasudeva Grihe Sakshad Bhagavan Purusha Paraha Chanishyate Tat Priyartam Sambhavantu Surastriha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Well, just a short intro before I begin. Everyone, it's so unusual to me that you're all so far away from this seat, but that's okay, no problem. I'll adjust. The other thing is, of course, I'm very happy to be in this community on the plane, on the way here. In front of me there was a man and there was a woman, and the woman was Asian. She was maybe in her late 20s or not more than early 30s. And the guy was probably in his mid 40s. And they were talking. She wanted to go fishing. And he was advising her where the good spots to go fishing. And then she was telling him about different pleasure experiences she had in her life, fishing in different places. Oh, you're already here. And his reply was regularly, good for you, good for you. And I was thinking, my God, this is horrible. Like these two people, I mean, they were judging the quality of one's experience, the quality of one's existence, the quality of being according to how much sense gratification the people derive. And this is just a formula for personal and collective catastrophe. And of course, the plane was filled with people with similar attitudes. So, after that experience, seeing or meeting devotees, it's very, very refreshing. The abode of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, surrounded by their devotees, always endeavoring for their pleasure. So, on to the lecture. So demigods appeal to Krishna, and Krishna is about to take some action. And Krishna is making arrangements. Basically, he just said it. I want all these women. I want all these women to appear down on the planet Earth to assist my pastimes. So many men would love to be in this position. They snap their fingers and a whole lot of gorgeous heavenly damsels, beautiful women, do whatever they like. Okay. Well, actually, even before that, how many men would, or women, would do, would be very happy to have the ability to go anywhere on a vacation to perform their pastimes. Most people struggle to just leave the city where they live and work to go on a short vacation. But for Krishna, that's no issue. He can not only go from one city to another, but he can also take a trip to a different planet and perform his pastimes. And even when people do manage to leave their place of work and where they live, and make it to a beautiful place, even when they make it to the beautiful place, it's not that everything quite envelops the way folks want it. It's usually maybe few things happen the way we predict, and the rest is pretty much forced upon us. So many men would like to be in this kind of position of Krishna. They snap their fingers, and many things are happening just the way they want to. And unfortunately, very few men, very few people, very few souls would like to be in the position of a servant of Krishna. Somehow or other, the idea to the conditioned soul of serving someone seems to be a freak out. that there will be someone that I have to serve. It's paradoxical and it's counterintuitive for one who is in the mundane consciousness that by giving up the desire to please myself, I will actually attain the greatest happiness possible. And therefore, people endeavor quite the opposite. But because folks are not in the position of Krishna, because folks are not in the position where they can control things out, therefore things are not happening the way folks want. And therefore, there's frustration at every step. So, another thing I did on the plane was I read an article in the New Yorker. And one of the themes, one of the prominent points that the guy brought up in this article is people's inability people's inability to predict what will bring him happiness. Most people would love to win a lottery. Probably most of us would love to win the lottery. However, statistics clearly show, in the article he presents, that those who do win the lottery do not experience increase of happiness. As a matter of fact, many of them feel quite miserable afterwards for a number of reasons. But anyways, that's a detail. The principle is that people have a difficulty, and we certainly fit into this category to the degree have not perfected ourselves spiritually as servants of Krishna. We're having a difficulty predicting what will bring us happiness, satisfaction. And therefore, we make all kinds of arrangements which end up not producing satisfaction or happiness, and very often result in a catastrophe, if not a whole series of catastrophes. That's our problem. Mataji just read the book excerpt from Mukunda Maharaj's book. I read the book in two sittings, by the way, in Mayapur. And one thing is very clear in that book. There was the summer of love. Or was it 65, 8, what was it? 67. The summer of love. Some of you were there in San Francisco? You were there? I think Maharaj was there. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, thank you. Anyhow, the summer of love. Well, I don't recall being there. Probably I wasn't. but, you know, the way people describe, even by meeting some devotees, I used to go to national rainbow gatherings quite a bit. And I remember meeting devotees that were there in San Francisco that summer, and they were telling me how thrilling it was to be there. It's very thrilling. And, you know, the fact that there was all these people, a whole lot of mostly young people, coming together, brought together with having one idea in common to sort of make it all coherent, keep it all cohesive, keep it all together, was very attractive. And they all thought, we're going to change the world. You know, the love, we're going to, you know, flood the world with love. It's a great idea. You know, even nowadays, as you travel around visiting different ISKCON temples, sometimes devotees say, oh, we need more love. I agree, sure, it's a cool thing. You know, more love, that's where it's at. And they certainly wanted to change the world, you know, free love, of course, which included a lot of other free things. But what was the result? I mean, what was the result? What was the result of the summer of love? It was a total catastrophe. I mean, Malati Mataji also said on a few occasions that I can recall right now that, you know, you could see the whole scene sort of changing, you know, from love and peace and love and whatever else was going on to mere drug addiction for the most part, to empty streets, to, you know, kids just, you know, sleeping in the streets, being all dirty and not taken care for. And the whole thing was sort of dwindling, and, you know, the idea of revolution, of changing the world with love, wasn't in anymore. It didn't seem to be reachable anymore. All of a sudden, it was delegated into history, you know. And then there was that concert, Rolling Stones concert. Yeah, and then the guy got stabbed there, and there was a toll catastrophe, another catastrophe. So much violence. I mean, that was supposed to be, you know, one of the pinnacle experiences of the hippie era, of hippie revolution, where they were going to change the world with love. And yet the whole thing turned to be so violent. So that's not the program. The program is, the really program is that there has to be a substance. Just the idea of love is not enough. Very few people can even define what love actually is. As Srila Rupa Goswami points out, there's a vast difference between love and lust. And basically the difference is that love goes to the root. And when it goes to the leaves and branches, that's lust. By directing one's love towards the root of all existence, Krishna, then the love gains the important quality which Srila Rupa Goswami points out, which is Shubhada. It's all auspicious. It's not that I love my beautiful girlfriend that's sitting on the other side of the dinner table, but and she hopefully loves me, but we eat the chicken. So, hello? I mean, okay, some loving thing is going on, but not quite towards the chicken. And that is the problem, when the love does not go to the root. So, Krishna is the solution to all problems. And giving up the idea of watering other people's leaves, or our own leaves, or actually in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, senses are compared to, it's a question to you just to see if you're, if everybody's with me. In the 15th chapter, the banyan tree, senses are compared to twigs. So it's not about watering the twigs. It's about watering the root. And it's not about watering our own twigs or anybody else's twigs. It's really about It's really about watering Krishna's twigs, which is actually the root. And the idea of surrendering to Krishna, which is what the demigods here did. Demigods are pious. This is a major difference between demigods and the demons, that the demons always want to solve it on their own. And I often think of this, you know, when I buy a new gadget, I can always go about assembling it in two ways, demonic and divine. Demonic way is that you just open the box, pull out the instructions, ditch them in the trash, and you just assemble it, and perhaps make a few mistakes along the way. Whereas the divine would be to read the instructions and follow them. Of course, this is just an example, so it may not be a perfect example. So similarly, whenever there is a problem, demigods go about solving it by approaching Krishna, by approaching an authority. Okay, this is how you solve it. And then they follow. This is what we're witnessing here. Whereas the demons always try to solve things on their own. And by the way, I'm not promoting here the deterministic idea of the universe where you have no role in the decision-making process and therefore you need not endeavor. No, you do need to work and you do need to apply your intelligence, but you should take the guidance of Krishna, the Shastra, the Guru, and the Sadhu. Otherwise, we quickly fall into the demonic nature. And the problem with demonic nature is that it's not natural, and it always results in pain. Now, most folks have a fear. Sometimes even we as devotees experience fear when it comes to surrendering to Krishna. I remember this one fellow. What's the verse? Yasyaham anugrinami harishyeta danam shanai. If I want to show someone special mercy, I take away his possessions. And then after that, is abandoned by all of his relatives and friends and is experiencing one misery after another. And so I told this to a fellow, to an Indian gentleman, probably in his mid-50s, who's become a member of our congregation, and he grew very concerned about this statement. He wanted me to show where that statement was in our books, in the Vedic text. So we walked over to the gift shop. I found the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, located the verse, and showed it to him. And he took the book and he snapped it closed like this. He says, "We have to hide this book." He said, "If anyone reads this, they will not join this movement." So sometimes as devotees, we also have this sort of fear that if I surrender to Krishna, what about my children? What about my possessions? Will I become an ascetic? Will I become a renunciate? I mean, will Krishna just like strip everything away from me and leave me in my copins to go around begging, force renunciation upon me or something? Well, the good news is that Krishna is not a, how should we put it, an emotionally immature fellow who needs a treatment. Neither is renunciation a matter of force. Neither is renunciation a matter of suffering. Renunciation is basically a product of a simple cost and benefit analysis. You do cost benefit analysis and then you come up with a conclusion. For example, I grew up on the Adriatic coast of Croatia. So that's not in Russia for all of you Americans. It's nowhere close. It's in Mediterranean. So hordes of tourists congregate down there every summer to soak their backsides in the pleasing sea. And there's a certain time every year during the summer, for maybe like 2 or 3 days, there's this peculiar wind that blows from the north, and I don't know how, but it just makes the sea more than cool, almost cold, which is very interesting because the Adriatic Sea is very warm. It's very, very warm. Sometimes so warm you don't want to swim in it. And during this time it becomes cold, just for a few days, some or other that happens. And then you don't find a single local on the beach. If you see anyone on the beach or trying to swim, you can tell he's a tourist. The guy just doesn't know what the heck's going on there. So why do the locals don't go to the beach on that day? It's a simple cost-benefit analysis. I mean, I go to the beach, I get scorched, and I can't go into the water because it's cold. It's not worth it. It just isn't worth it. And then all of a sudden, the guy is renounced. So any renunciation is a simple result of cost-benefit analysis. And it takes some wisdom. That's the thing, you know, we navigate through our lives, sometimes blindly. But we try to navigate. We try to predict what will give us pleasure. And then sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't get it. And sometimes, you know, after getting it and not getting it for a very long time, we start noticing patterns. And then these patterns we recognize as principles. Then once we get the principles down, then we can do our cost-benefit analysis. And therefore, then people who mature in the school of life, the school of hard knocks, eventually grow detached from the idea that I should water my own senses or that I should water anybody else's senses. I should rather water Krishna's senses. And that point becomes becomes just natural. Just like if we read, I just read the other day the story of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, who among the devotees of Lord Chaitanya exhibited renunciation to the greatest degree. And, you know, it's not that he was, you know, holding back his wild horses and suffering while he was being renounced. No, he was fully experiencing higher pleasure. Therefore, he renounced things that were simply botheration. One of the natural byproducts of focus is that you're not aware of other things. So simply by focusing on Krishna, serving Krishna, we automatically renounce everything else. So we experience a higher pleasure, our attention is taken, and everything else doesn't have us, just the way it should be. And so, anyways, Krishna fully understands this, and rarely does Krishna throw someone into a painful experience, like when you steal a toy from a baby and you don't want to give it back and just let the baby cry. I never saw Srila Prabhupada treat babies like that. So similarly, Krishna does not treat his children in such a manner. But Krishna helps. A little bit of renunciation and a little bit of the higher taste. And in this way, we eventually abandon the idea to place ourselves in the center, the idea where we're projecting the future happiness, thinking that my happiness lies in selfish concerns, naturally goes to the side. So that is the point. I think the other things that are mentioned in this purport are probably repeated a number of times. I assume everyone here is a seasoned devotee. So things about Krishna's traveling eternal road show is not something that you're not familiar with. But the things I spoke about, I think, are things that we commonly fail at, because once we acquire that kind of wisdom, we pretty much become a liberated person, so it's worth repeating time and time again. So, are there any questions or comments, please? Going once.
Hey. There is one. Actually, Prabhupada did sometimes tease children, like,
yes.
by hiding things.
Yeah.
And he said that old Bengali gentlemen like to see children cry, but that's just something he said as a joke. But. Also, I was at the Altamont concert, but just as you might be interested to find out, the devotees chanted there also.
Oh, really?
In the beginning. And if you come across any of the old, like you said, you might have met them, old San Francisco devotees. I don't know where, who they are, but they probably look hairy now with beards. But
some.
Some of them, yeah. But whoever it was, I don't know, because I was way in the back, and... Mick Jagger even became very scared himself. the Rolling Stones, because the Hells Angels there were no police there. They were in charge of everything.
Yeah, they hired Hells Angels. They gave them a bunch of beer to drink in exchange.
They were throwing the bottle people from the top of buses.
They made a mistake. The stage was at the bottom of a slope. If you ever organize a big event, you just don't want to do that, because people naturally gravitate towards the stage. I don't know if you ever, I still sometimes go, but not as much as I used to rainbow gatherings. And when you try to have a kirtan on a slope, every time you jump, when you fall down, when you touch the ground again, it moves you towards the bottom of the slope. So every time I make a movement, it naturally gravitates. So that was one of the problems. Everything went wrong with it, you know. And so all masses were naturally pressing towards the stage, and down there they had these drunk Hell's Angels who were known as, you know, not quite, you know, princess-like in their behavior, and the rest is history. But the principle is, you see, this is the point, that people who are not wise, people who are living their lives, but not detecting the principles by which life runs, you know, they analyze this into details and they figure all these things out, but they miss the principle. You know, the principle is that time and time again, your plans are going to be frustrated. And more so, they're geared towards your personal, anybody else's personal enjoyment. To that degree, it's going to be a catastrophe. That is the principle. I mean, I know when I lived in L.A., we would distribute books at the airport. And then I forget a few holidays when everybody was flying out. And we would always go there to distribute books when people were flying out. And they're all in the jolly mood, you know, going off to a vacation. They're all in the jolly mood. It was really easy to distribute books. You know, myself, I was never good at it. Even I was able to distribute some books. But we would not go to the airport when they were coming back. And you as devotees are thinking, guess why? You know, they all come back fried and, you know, because things did not really go the way they wanted it, you know. That's the way it goes, which constitutional position of the living being is a humble servant of a servant of a servant. Things are imposed on us. I mean, my mother never asked me, as a teenager, I was, excuse my plain English, pissed, very upset, that no one asked me what name you wanted, what name I wanted. They just gave me a name. And many things in our lives, I mean, no one asked me whether I wanted to be male or female, you know, how tall I wanted to be, or, you know, that the hair grows in places where I don't want it, and it doesn't grow in places where I want it. And the list goes on, you know. So, you know, when we're trying to understand that which we do not know, we should move from the position of that which we know. And we know these things. So that should indicate us the nature of reality. Therefore, when I, even as a teenager, when I read Srila Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada said, yeah, you're tiny, to me that just made so much sense. Yeah, I'm tiny. You know, I mean, so many things are going wrong. You know, my girlfriend ditched me. You know, and you know, my parents want me to get a job I don't want to have. So many things. I mean, one thing after another. You name it. You know. Oops, sorry, Prabhu. Yes, please.
Yeah, that's the real point. I would totally agree. That's the real point, the real purport to the whole thing. But I just want to make clear, I was only in kindergarten, so I wasn't at the Rolling Stones concert, so I wasn't responsible for anything that happened there. But but on a positive, you know, I'm joking, but on the positive side of that whole summer love thing, I mean, it did provide an incubator for establishing the Krishna conscious movement, though otherwise it was pretty problematic, yeah.
Okay, I agree with you, and Srila Prabhupada certainly said many great things, like, for example, Srila Prabhupada appreciated America and Americans for giving him the facility to spread the movement. But honestly, it really doesn't matter what the external circumstances are. You just, you know, attempt to serve Krishna, and that's all that really matters. You know, like, throughout the years, I've been always hearing from different devotees saying, now is the best time to spread the movement. Now is the best time to preach. It always has been and always will be, you know. Now is the best time. What's that? I think it's a Chinese saying. How does that go? The best time to plant the tree was yesterday, and the next best time is now. Something like that. In other words, you know, don't delay. I mean, Krishna consciousness is not really depending on external circumstances. It's just a matter of us taking advantage of the great privilege to serve Srila Prabhupada, to serve the movement, to serve Krishna indirectly. Directly, most of us are probably not qualified. And the rest is just should be just fine. So whether there was there were hippies or not, if it wasn't for hippies, if it weren't hippies, it would have been something else, you know. So, yeah. Mataji, I don't want to go over time. You just quarter to. Okay.
Luki was saying you're doing a different type of preaching to the young people in San Diego. Would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, which one? We do so many different things. Okay. Giving someone a book by Srila Prabhupada is just a mere beginning. And modern kids, how many of you have teenage kids? And older, okay. Do they wear watches? Yeah, do you know why don't they wear watches? Yeah, because cell phone performs like 28 different functions, cooks, cleans, entertains you, everything you want. And the dumb watch just tells you what the time is. It's like a single function device. So with the development of technology, the psychology of people also changes. The way you teach nowadays, I don't see an awful lot of kids here. And also, I grew up in Mediterranean where there's a whole lot of churches and temples, you know, Roman Catholic temples. And they used to be, when I was a kid, packed with monks and nuns. Nowadays, they're frequented only by old people. Young people are too restless to be educated in this kind of a manner where you talk to them and they just listen. And then you give them 10 minutes at the end for a bit of a discussion. So people are changed. They're very restless. Every time you see your kid, you know, he or she is probably texting. You just cannot be right there and be here now. Anyways, another. They're always somewhere else. So, and the kids also have a certain attitude towards religion. And they have a certain attitude towards religious vocabulary. So religious vocabulary conjures up certain images in their minds that put them off. So these are all different obstacles which you need to overcome in order to help that soul actually become a traditional committed devotee of Krishna. So we do all kinds of things. Publish a newspaper. Sometimes I get comments by devotees, you know, sometimes bashing, sometimes approving. The paper is not written for devotees, period. If you want to read it, okay, but don't write me any comments about it. The paper is written for young, angry kids. Another full stop. The paper has a certain aggression. There's a point to it, you know. It's filled with graphics that are appealing to people who have aggression in their body due to, you know, lust they have not satisfied and so on. And due to the hormones boiling all over the place. And people are just angry. Those are the kids. So there's the newspaper. It's distributed all the health food stores, different street corners, you know, how they have those little boxes, yeah.
What's your box?
16 rounds to Samadhi. That's the title of the newspaper. And paper doesn't really tell him about Krishna, just tells him about spiritual stuff, just sticking to some principles, you know. Invites him to our lounge. Lounge is just a place where they can come and hang out. Just hang out with devotees and other people that come there. And once they're a little bit acclimatized, we have him read Srila Prabhupada's books. We have quite a few brahmacharis down there. So, you know, brahmacharis strike friendships with these people. And it's very easy for them to, you know, join a temple like it used to be, you join the temple. you give up everything and join the temple. And those who don't do that, we have a nice congregational network of home programs for these young people, which are not standard devotee programs. They're tailored specifically for these kids. And as a result, we've been growing pretty good. We have an ashram full of young American men and a congregation filled with some more men and young women. If anyone of you has enough money to build us another ashram, we'd appreciate it. Overflowing, I mean, it can be much better, When I joined there, we had 50 young men and women living in a house smaller than the San Diego temple. And sometimes when it rained, meant that some devotees had to sleep in the house, which was impossible because all the hallways and shoe rooms and rooms were covered with bodies. That was very blissful. I liked it. Okay. With your permission, I'll end here. Krantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Itai Gaur Premanande.